Good morning, everybody. This is Dave Vellante. Welcome to the January 25th Wikibon Peer Insight Research Meeting, where peers discuss challenging problems in the enterprise. And today's discussion is around the virtual desktop. And we've got a great panel here today. On the call are several guests. Glenda Canfield, who is calling in from lovely Texas. Glenda's a desktop specialist with VMware. Welcome, Glenda.
Thank you.
And Michael Keane is on, who's a technology strategist at Lakeside Software. I should mention Michael is at Michael_Keane, and Glenda is at Glenda Canfield. So welcome, Michael.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And we also have Jason Langone at Langone J, who's the Director of Virtualization Cloud and Storage at Microtech. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you, sir.
And we've got a couple of Skype connections, right? I'm here with Stu Miniman.
Yep.
Who's running the Skype connection.
Thanks, Dave. So in addition to doing the live TV on Justin TV, we're adding in a Skype connection. So we've got Jason and Mike doing the Skype Beta 5, which will have some group calling through the TriCast.
Another first to the TriCast. First, and we're here also with a good friend, John MacArthur. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Dave.
Good to see everybody. Okay, so as I say, we're here at the Wikibon headquarters. We're broadcasting live on justin.tv/wikibon, and we really understand the state of VDI solutions. When we were prepping for this, the panel had kind of an aversion to the term VDI, so we'll talk about that a little bit. we want to talk about the implications there for end users. And just some quick housekeeping, if you're not one of the main speakers. Oh, I should also mention we have a good friend Rob Pegler on as well. Rob, you there?
I am, Dave. Thanks.
And Rob's going to, as always, bring in a good storage perspective. So if you're not speaking or planning to speak, please *6 to mute your phone or just use your mute button. But if you don't have one, *6 will do it. And then you can *6 to unmute if you want to participate, which is welcome to do. Let me set up the call. So the premise here is the idea embodied in virtual desktop infrastructure, what's commonly known as VDI, really needs to evolve to be more widely adopted within organizations. Specifically, value from virtual client infrastructure has to move beyond this tie to any specific physical device, for instance, a desktop or a laptop or a notebook, more toward providing secure platform agnostic access to any device, any data, any application from any location at any time. So the focal point of VDI is really moving from the PC device to the end user and the applications and data that those end users wish to access. So that's the premise for the call. And we'll talk about that in some depth, but I'd like to start with the panel. Maybe we could start with Glenda. And can you talk a little bit about where you see VDI or the virtual desktop today? What kind of penetration are you seeing, and what kind of use cases are there?
Well, I mean, there's some, you know, very specific use cases right now around VDI. A lot of it is in education, you know, as far as like training and enabling, you know, students to be educated using computers so that, you know, they grow up and understand how those things work natively. We're seeing it a lot in the medical field with the Follow Me desktop, where nurses and doctors are, you know, there's a big proliferation of tablet devices in the medical field, and you're also looking at the fact that they want the Follow Me desktop, and they want to have a card that they can just scan and then, you know, type in their name really quickly on a kiosk mode, you know, device and move from patient to patient and have that information move with them. And those are two really big verticals for, you know, virtual desktops. And that's where we're seeing the most penetration as far as education and hospitals and, you know, clinics, those type of things. Those are really, you know, the major verticals that are taking up most of my personal time.
Okay. Now, Jason, I'm interested, you know, your title is you've got virtualization cloud and storage in your title. What are the things related to those areas that users need to think about in terms of virtual desktop deployments?
Sure. So, I mean, just to clarify here, and I completely agree with Glenda on some of the vertical-based adoption, ed, healthcare, and my primary vertical, which is U.S. federal.
Let me just qualify real quick. I'm sorry. I don't deal with the government market at all. That's out of my you know, circle of influence or anything. But yeah, the government is a major vertical as well, and I don't want anybody to think that I'm kind of marginalizing that because it's huge.
No, we're on the same page. You know, to kind of go back to the question, you know, right now, most of the accounts I'm talking to and a lot of the projects I'm kicking off, I'm flying out to Kansas City tomorrow to kick one off, are VDI related. There's been a lot of interest over the last couple of years, a lot of people kicking the tire on 20-seat deployments. Last year, people were kicking the tire on, you know, 200-seat deployments and 500-seat deployments, and now we've actually got some people implementing 1,000 to maybe even 5,000. I was in Kuwait last quarter doing a 15,000-seat deployment education in that scenario. But a lot of the stuff is tied together. You know, virtualization obviously is what this stuff is running on. Storage is probably the greatest drag next to services when it comes to doing VDI projects. And then cloud, you know, there's a lot of talk about how do we automate some of this, how do we do desktop as a service, which, to be honest, doesn't have a huge play in my primary vertical, but I imagine it does in Ed.
So, Michael, in your role as technology strategist, what does it take to deploy desktop virtualization in what you're seeing with clients? Where do they start?
You couldn't have teed that up even any better, Dave, so thank you. The message that I'm delivering here from Lakeside is it's all about the data. So without the proper data about the environment, about the end user, about the apps, performance and things like that, VDI, as everybody likes to use the term, isn't possible. You've got to have the right intelligence in which to make those decisions and provide what I like to call decision acuity, giving you the ability to take the data that's available and make it actionable and create it and put it together and have a plan and then be able to make business-based decisions off of that data. So that's really what we're seeing. You know, is the vertical, yeah, I mean, I cross all verticals. I cross ed, I cross financial services, you know, the federal space where Jason plays. The vertical doesn't matter. It's all about the customer data. It's all about, again, what it comes down to is the end user experience. You know, my question.
I gotta go to you, Michael. I agree with you on the end user experience being what's really, you know, the thing that either makes it work or makes it not work. But decision acuity. Oh my God, I'm gonna have to remember that and leverage that in the future. See, I used that with leverage. Anyway. basically, you know, what I tell customers all the time is look, you need to categorize your users. What do your users need to get their job done? You know, what is it, you know, what can you provide to them that's going to make them the most productive? And then you've got to categorize it and figure out, you know, how you can deliver what each of your individual groups of users actually need. And that's when, you know, you really learn how to, or you really figure out who you need to provide an actual, you know, virtual operating system to versus just, you know, providing them with applications, because I think
and you make a great point, and user categorization and what I call user tiering is critical. You've got to understand that, but what I like to find, you know, what I've seen in engagements has been, you know, customers being able to go, yeah, here's what I think, but they don't know. There's no concrete data, you know, it's what I call, so I mean, you like decision acuity, well, try this one on for size. The problem today between the VDI vision that everybody has within organizations and VDI reality, the gap between the two is what I call the dragon gap. And the dragon gap, if you look at an ancient map of the cartographers, they had serpents and dragons in the unexplored areas of the ocean. That's IT, that's the VDI space today. In order for you to bridge the gap and get rid of the serpents and the dragons is to have the data. User tier it, but back it up with solid data about your environment, about your apps, about the OS, and about the users, and this goes a lot smoother.
So this is John. I got a couple of questions for you because I want to try to help it keep it practical for some of the people on the phone. What are some of the dimensions of the tiering? Because I don't think you're just talking about a unidimensional performance or something like that. So what are some of the dimensions of the tiering? number one? And number two, what are the collection methods for the data that you think needs to drive this model?
What data? What, go ahead, Glenda, what?
I said that's a great one for you, Michael. I was kind of letting you lead that.
Yeah, so I mean the collection method, right? So there's tools out there, but it's you know how granular you need to get with that data, right? So I mean everybody talked about agentless collection methods and agent-based collection methods, but using a tool like Lakeside, SysTrack, like Liquidware, whatever's out there, it's the data, right? As long as you're collecting the data that's specific about the environment, about the end user, that's the collection method. You start doing it in by human way, by sitting down and asking the questions, well, you're introducing human error. You need to automate that, and you need to have the granularity of the data. So it's a tool. From the user tiering perspective, you know, it's based on job category. You know, are you a knowledge worker? Are you a task-based worker? And then taking that and then mapping the solution into those tiers. So,
just out of curiosity, what are you two, both Michael and Glenda, doing for net new construction, right? So I'm at a customer, they're looking to build out a new hospital or a new training facility or, you know, something new. You're obviously not
right.
going to collect data. It's a new user group or a new user class. How are you guys pulling numbers and manipulating numbers there?
I mean, Jason, to be honest with you, for net new, it's a lot of what historical findings, right? So, I mean, is this a healthcare vertical? Is it financial services? Where is it? We can, you know, the amount of historical data that we've gathered, we're able to make really educated decisions about, yeah, based upon what we've seen in the past, this is what we can at least expect until we stand it up and start benchmarking in a new environment. So that's how we approach it.
Michael, is there a pool of information that the industry is using? Is it something that your company has, you know, specific guidelines that they're using? Or, you know, how are we maturing the model as an industry?
I guess, you know, the biggest point is the end user experience. You know, how can you quantify and make it actionable to the end user experience? What's important to the end user? I asked that question on Twitter this morning, and Tom Howarth replied, and he said, it's usability and speed, but it's all perception, right? So based upon usability, what's usability? Well, it's application launch time, it's login time, it's boot time. It's, you know, then you get back to the speed, and the usability is my application available now? Can I get to it when I want to get to it? So those are the types of things that we start to model. I mean, we've got 10,000 data points that we look at, you know, beyond just the user experience stuff. But that's really the most critical piece. You know, putting the application packages together and the storage plan and the migration plan together, those are great pieces, but understanding the end user is critical.
I was going to say, to quote Brian Madden from a few years ago, he had a blog post that said, it's all about delivering applications, period. And that's what it is. I mean, you need to find out, you know, what applications these organizations are going to be using, what they've used in the past, and you need to, you know, be able to go in there with some, you know, kind of scope of how, you know, how much bandwidth they need as far as network traffic, how much, you know, storage do they need, how much data are they collecting, things like that. I mean, those are things that really, until you get into it and you're actually in the trench, and you're building this stuff on site with these companies, that's when you really, you know, find out what works and what doesn't. You know, it's really fantastic to have, you know, all kinds of trending data from, like, previous hospitals or previous, you know, schools or whatever to give you some kind of a baseline. But honestly, you don't know what the watermark is until you have people actively working on it. And that's when you start, you know, figuring out, you know, what they really truly are going to need to be, you know, productive and effective in their work and in their jobs. And when you think about the fact that your, you know, VDI is so big in medical right now, you got to realize, you know, people's lives are on the line with this stuff, and they're leveraging this technology to make people better and to save lives. And, you know, it becomes really, you know, important and critical that you get the exact right information that you know you need to create an infrastructure that is going to be strong enough to sustain these people. I want to make sure that everybody understands that, yeah, you can walk in there with all this historical training information that you've got, but until you're in the trench and you're actually building it out, that's when you find out, you know, what works and what doesn't.
Well, I mean, that comes down to methodology, right? So your methodology should be, you know, that every, I mean, Jason uses it, I use it, you know, any consultant in the field uses it. It's analyzed, it's designed, it's build, test, and it's rollout. If you're not analyzing it, and you don't have an understanding, I mean, I've walked into numerous customer accounts and said, what's on the endpoint? And they don't know. They have a good idea, and they could go to STCM or they could go to the SMS and whatever they think they're deploying as a true IT-supported package. But, you know, a lot of people have talked about, and it's this whole consumerization of IT, is that people are going to go get the tools they need to do their job, which now introduces shadow IT. Now throws everything into a loop because now you need to do the analysis. Now you need to know what's going on the endpoint.
So Steve Kaplan actually just posted a question on Justin. Steve is ROI dude. He said, Michael, I understand your concern for data regarding virtual desktops, but what about the concept of virtual desktops as a subset of an overall virtualized infrastructure? And I guess... So we'll talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so great question, and Steve is right on. You know, it's not just about virtual desktops. You know, I mean, Dan Feller, so at DJ Feller, Dan Feller from Citrix, you know, made a statement, it was just a couple of weeks ago, he had a blog post that, you know, he's now kind of shifted to the average consultant answer to it depends, to no, it's going to be a blend of virtual desktops, physical desktops, and server-based computing and app virtualization. It has to be part of the overall strategy. What's your delivery strategy?
I think that comes from, though, Michael, the fact that we've got so many different applications that we have got to provide to the end users, and those applications have different dependencies. And at the beginning of this, you know, Stu was talking about the fact that, you know, we're trying to give people access to anything from any device, anytime, anywhere.
Yep.
Well,
yep.
And the bottom line is applications and the way that they're built and the way that, you know, they work, that's what drives a lot of the decisions when you're talking about virtual desktops and virtual infrastructure. And that's where Citrix comes in with the published applications. And it's basically a hybrid, and there's nothing that we can do to change that at this point, right? It's always going to be one of these solutions where, you know, you have a slice of this solution. You know, you get a slice of virtualized servers. You get a slice of, you know, virtualized desktops. You got a slice of virtualized applications, and they're all different layers, and you're just basically layering it on top of each other depending on what the end user needs to be productive to get the job done.
Yep. And to satisfy Doug Brown's question and Doug Brown's little his post, and it's type 1 hypervisors as well. So, I mean, you know, let's start looking at that, too. You know, that's got to be part of the mix.
Type 1, type 2. And the comments you both made, you know, I think Kaplan's spot on. I know Kaplan has a lot of, you know, talks about the virtualized infrastructure, the virtualized data center. I can tell you a lot of the companies I'm dealing with, they're building out a platform that's going to host virtualized servers and virtualized desktops. And then the question is, how do you segregate the two within the virtual data center? You know, it's no longer this rack's going to be for this and that rack's going to be for that. It's how do you segment within the virtual infrastructure, whether it's Shield or Reflex or whatever your solution of choice is, then how do you build out properly tiered storage to support a desktop IOP requirement and a server-vert IOP requirement?
Absolutely. Yep.
So in the spirit of cold, hard facts, I asked Stu, and he and I tried to just grab some survey data that was out there. So let me just put it out there, see if it generates any discussion. So we found a few surveys. One was an Information Week survey, and another one was a register survey that was done in conjunction with Ziotech, and then we also had some data that I think Falcon Store supplied us. And so roughly, in terms of adoption, between the high 60s and high 70s, 68 to 77% said they're either using or testing or strongly considering a virtual desktop. And then the second data point, which I think is really open for discussion, is some TCO data that we had that came from, actually, I believe Falcon Store. They had VDI deployments at $30 to $40 per user with data protection
versus 70 to 90 per user without data protection in a traditional client model. Now I've seen data that is almost the reverse, and I know in some of the discussions I've had with VMware that one of the big complaints is just the overall storage, you know, costs driving up TCO. So I'd be interested in there. And then the other thing is the top three benefits that we're seeing in some of these surveys from VDI deployments were top four: high availability, second, better utilization, third, simpler management, and fourth, OPEX and security. And then the big barriers were, interestingly, the business case is hard. Virtualization, server virtualization, the business case is quite simple, but not the case with VDI. And then the other point was the time to value oftentimes requires the project to be complete, so you're not getting a benefit stream until you've spent all that upfront cash and deployment money. And then, of course, not surprising, user pushback was performance and functionality. So I just want to put those data points out there and see if those is that consistent with what you guys are seeing.
Yes, that's exactly what we're saying. You know, and it comes down to, I mean, ROI, and I mean, that's so subjective. I can make an ROI calculator look any way I want it to look, but you need to use the customer data. You know, I mean, use their numbers. You know, have that discussion with them. That's something that you can't automatically just collect with a tool. You actually need to ask the card question: what's it cost? What's this? What's this cost? What's this cost? And then do the math. You know,
well,
performance.
When I'm talking to customers, one of the first questions that I ask them is, what do you think your VDI use case is? Because I want to make sure that the customers understand what VDI actually is and what its value is. And by asking that question, by saying, hey, what is your use case for VDI? What do you think it is? Why am I talking to you? That enables them to actually, you know, kind of own it and explain to me why they think that VDI is important and how it would make their lives easier as administrators. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, it is, you know, there are a lot of barriers to adoption, but at the same time, there are such a huge number of people who are adopting it, are in POC mode, I mean, proof of concept mode, that, I mean, obviously there's a need for it out there. And, you know, for the first couple of years when we were talking about virtual desktops, you know, it was all the buzz and everything was going to be, you know, virtual desktop and blah, 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 but now, of course, we're at a point where we're realizing, hey, you know, right now where the technology stands, there's some very great, you know, ways to leverage this technology today. Clearly, it's not as evolved as it's going to end up being, because we all know we're going to end up in a place where everybody pretty much telecommutes, unless they're doctors or something, but everybody's going to pretty much telecommute, and even kids are going to be, you know, online at home in a different room from the parent's office and, you know, getting educated, you know, in a different room. I mean, that's where we're going with all of this access devices. And all these access devices, of course, are also driving a lot of the decisions for a lot of these companies when it comes to leveraging VDI to enable, you know, all these customers, all these end users who are going out and buying all these tablets and all these netbooks and expecting to be able to do their job anywhere, anytime. You know,
Here's the other question, too, and more for Jason. I mean, you know, Jason being in the federal space, you know, are you seeing more of a drive around the ROI and the TCO?
To be honest, that's probably towards the end of my slide deck. You know, Microtech, our focus primarily U.S. federal, supporting the warfighter. Number one, you know, the first six slides for me are security, 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 security. How you prevent?
Yeah. Okay. Good.
How do you, you know, deploy this stuff in garrison, in theater, et cetera? So for me, it's security, it's availability. Sometimes it's footprint in a tactical vehicle. Very, very seldom is it ROI, maybe in the civilian side. Certainly had that discussion on the civilian side. I've never had a TCO discussion.
So Jason, you know, a couple of things I've read of yours recently. First of all, there was a really good thread on Quora talking about kind of, you know, what's changed with the desktop virtualization VDI discussion, you know, why should it be taking off now? And the follow-up piece is you wrote a really interesting piece talking about taking the iPad as your client, and I'm wondering, is that really a science experiment, or is that something that you're going to be, you know, taking off in the near future, kind of that end-user computing vision that we've heard from companies like VMware and Cisco?
You know, the iPad thing is a little tricky. I mean, I you know, I was using it now quite some time, but decided to use it exclusively, I don't know, right after Thanksgiving, something like that, in anticipation that the VMware client was, you know, going to be out sometime this quarter, that I would get familiar with it so that when the Vue client came out, I'd be able to compare, you know, some of the stuff that's available today, primarily Wise Pocket Cloud. What I found is that it's extreme, you know, maybe not extremely, but it's quite limiting, right? I do a lot, you know, I'm taking notes right now in Penultimate. You know, I'll whiteboard some stuff in Adobe Ideas. How do I get that back into the virtual infrastructure? You know, I'm using a cooked up Dropbox solution. There's no way I'm going to implement that at an Army customer. You know, maybe not even in a hospital, you know, where you've got compliance issues. So until that's sorted out, I mean, it's cool. It's a conversation starter, but that's, for me right now, that's about all it is. Unless you start talking about, which I think Glenda or Michael brought up earlier, where VDI is primarily about delivering applications, which, you know, when I was using the Citrix Zen client, to me that makes more sense. But again, I still have some data, potential data issues for stuff I author on the iPad. But, you know, I see a lot of interest. I don't see people doing 10,000 iPads out in the field yet.
Right, but that's what we're seeing, though. I mean, we're getting a lot of asks, right? We're getting a lot of asks about the iPad, and we're getting a lot of asks about, you know, netbooks and, you know, smartphones and things along that nature, because people do, at this point, have this weird expectation to be able to do their job anytime, from anywhere, even if they're at a soccer game watching their kids play. You know, and because, you know, there are, you know, ways to do that already, not, you know, not natively, you know, or intuitive, but people can do it, they are actually, you know, expecting that. That's the new expectation, right? And that's why you see, you know, everybody coming out with all this stuff for the iPhone and for, you know, the iPad. So, yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, that's where we're headed. And I think that I got a great example as far as security. I'm in Dallas, right? We have the Super Bowl coming here. And one of the ladies who was in charge of the security for the Super Bowl ended up leaving her laptop in her car at Joe's Crab Shack. Somebody stole her laptop, and it became a national incident, and they got the FBI involved in it, right? And if she had been using VDI, even if she'd been using local mode, where, you know, she could check out her operating system, that stuff would have been encrypted, and it wouldn't have been an issue. Instead, it turned into an international type, you know, brouhaha.
So I want to explore this in some depth, the new devices, but before we get off the ROI and commercial space, I want to just drill down a little bit into storage and give Rob an opportunity. So, you know, we hear a lot that virtualization breaks storage. I frequently hear that the TCO ROI issues, sort of the buck stops at storage and perhaps elsewhere. Rob, can you give us your angle on this? Why is it that storage is such a difficult challenge? You know, is it bootstorms? Is it just the centralized deployment model? Is it, you know, Microsoft turning the knobs? What's your angle on this?
Yeah, Dave, thanks. There are actually several angles, and I've been listening to the very good discussion before. So a couple of points for you. So you're right. I think one of the panelists mentioned storage is the greatest drag, and that's absolutely true if you look at it from a business point of view. You know, a dollar's worth of virtual desktop deployment might result in, you know, X dollars worth of storage, and X can be anywhere from 3 to 10. On another sense of the word, storage is the greatest drag. In other words, most of the deployments that do have problems tend to be around the storage, and I/O in particular. So here's a couple of things to consider with virtual desktop and storage. It's not just how much. You know, for time immemorial, we've been trying to size storage just by capacity. You know, how many bytes do you need? Of what type of storage, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Well, with VDI, it's really how much, how fast. And the how fast part is actually a very, very important point. So when you size a VDI or a virtual desktop installation, and it, not just VDI, you know, a normal virtual desktop on server, but remote desktop access, stream desktop, streams apps, you know, all the various methods that one can get to a virtual desktop, including iPad, by the way, which I use in a remote desktop app sense, and it works very, very well. And, you know, having network shares there available to you on iPad is also a big key. Somebody mentioned local storage. So how much, how fast is very important. The earlier discussion about how do you, you know, size and measure environments for virtual desktop, That's not only important, that's extremely important in storage. You have to know your access patterns. You have to know your I/O patterns. And in general, you know, a set of virtual desktops or clients that are accessing desktops virtually are going to take all those nice, clean individual streams and randomize them. So if you're using centralized storage, which most people do, behind the scenes for virtual desktop, you're going to translate all those nice, well-behaved streams into a not very nice, extremely unwell-behaved stream of I/O. It's going to be random. It's going to be a read-write mix, no question about it. So key to that is to do the scaling approach, test and verify and measure I/O workloads at small scale with a small number of seats. Even something as small as a dozen seats, all doing random access I/O, you know, again, when put together, you're going to get a very good idea about the scaling approach to storage. And again, not just how much, but how much, how fast. Boot storms are a particularly prevalent barrier to a good adoption. Boot and login is something we do once, but it turns out to be the very high Pareto I/O workload. And I've done individual testing even 2 years ago. I spoke at Flash Memory Summit about Windows 7 and booting. And a clean Windows 7 boot might take anywhere from 100 to 250,000 IOs. And a Windows 7 desktop boot with lots and lots of background services and antivirus and all the automatic application starts, that might take a million IOs, half of which are writes because you're using a page file. So all of that has to be considered for storage, as well as what then is your steady state application workload. Are you streaming the app to the desktop? Are you accessing apps remotely, driving I/O to the desktop, in particular graphics over the network? So all that workload has to be considered. And again, this you see this huge bottleneck effect where the individual I/O streams, maybe it's only 5 or 10 IOPS per seat, which is a figure that some vendors use. Other vendors use 20 or 30 IOPS per seat. And again, that's why measurement and the project, the scaling approach, is so important for storage, because it's not the bytes that'll kill you, it's the IOPS that'll kill you, and then in turn the response to that. You know, I've sat in a number of virtual desktop deployments, and the constant theme from the users, you know, sitting in the seat is, you know, I want my machine to boot just as fast or faster than it does yep. with a local disk. And the same thing for login and logout. Login and logout are the number two and number three generator of I/O because you're flushing out things to disk, and another consideration is, do you allow users to save to desktop? If you do, that puts a completely different twist on the I/O streams and where you segregate that save to desktop I/O away versus using a thin or a cloned version of the desktop image itself. So all those things have to be taken into account. And again, you wouldn't think so. You think, hey, storage is storage, right? It's just there. But it turns out to be, in my opinion, the number one consideration when doing any kind of non-trivial virtual desktop implementation.
Dave?
Yes.
This is Mike Alvarado. I have a question about storage.
Hey, Mike.
I wonder if people or your panel can comment on LUN locking and its particular challenges in virtualized environments.
Jason had a good smile.
I did. You know, historically, I've not been a huge fan of NFS. I see a lot more NFS adoption specifically because of VDI and the way, you know, you would have a large multitude of VMs that need to lock a LUN at a specific time. Doing NFS obviously has some huge advantages for high-quantity VM environments. You know, a lot of people aren't, go ahead, I'm sorry,
just to clarify, this is using SCSI persistent reservation, so at the block level.
Right, yeah.
So this is – oh, go ahead.
After you.
I was going to say, so for at that level, you know, you're doing block access I/O. There are certainly some implementations that use, you know, persistent reserve at the LUN level. Interestingly enough, some of the more, shall we say, wise implementations – are looking at extent level reserves, which is much more productive, especially in a virtual desktop and virtual server environment. And I think you're going to see more and more implementations do that. Now, that, of course, takes cooperation between the initiators and the targets. But, yeah, whole unlocking level is going to be increasingly difficult. And that really is one issue which has forced people to go to NFS, and NFS version 4, especially because of the much better, you know, op-locking than the handshaking that's going on in NFS version 4. But I think if you're going to do SCSI, you should really do extent level reserves, and getting the hypervisors and the clients to understand that is key.
So we got a couple questions from the Justin audience. One is actually from Nick Allen. He says, do you have any examples of VDI failures due to the lack of data or lack of analysis or poor design? Do you have any real-world learning experience that users on the call could draw from? Any watch out and gotchas that you guys have?
Well, without mentioning customers, yes.
I do too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to name names.
What's the biggest mistake you see?
Lack of planning.
And what does that result in? Just a bad user experience, higher costs,
yeah.
Failed projects?
It's everything, right, Dave? So, I mean, if you don't plan it, A, you don't know what your users are doing, and therefore, and I think it's the ultimate. So, I mean, as we play, you know, as we play this ball game of VDI, if you get the end user wrong, you can pick up your bat, your ball, and your glove, and you can go home because it's game over.
Right, and to kind of move further into that, if, you know, a lot of people, what they're seeing, a lot of customers, what they're seeing is they're seeing, you know, for lack of a better term, virtual desktop sprawl, right? So they put it together, they've got a specific category of their users in mind for the solution, and they build for that category of users. And what ends up happening is more and more users, kind of, you know, back in the old terminal server days, right, they see more and more use cases for terminal server and Citrix, so you get more and more users on there. Well, I'm seeing that, and it goes back to what Michael was saying about lack of planning. You know, if you don't plan on, you know, scalability and sustainability, then, yeah, you're going to run into problems when you start, you know, loading user after user into your – I didn't mean to say loser. That was a slip of the tongue, by the way. User after user. Onto your infrastructure, yeah, you're going to bog it down and everybody's experience is going to stink out loud. So, planning and being able to, you know, figure out what you need today but what you're going to need, you know, tomorrow is, you know, a big part of that. And, you know, it goes back to what Mike said with planning. It's like you cannot implement something just as a solution for your users today. You have to be looking forward and thinking about sustaining it and how you're going to support it for the next 10, 20 years. I mean, it's not... These solutions aren't meant to be, you know, temporary solutions.
Yeah, I'd like to piggyback real quick, and I agree with everything the panel said. Kind of to the other piece, so planning's up front, I'll say I see a huge lack of operational readiness, right? So a design's been planned and implemented, and great, it's time for the consultants to pack up and fly home, but the customer's not ready to use it. They don't know how to maintain it. How do they apply patches? So I'd say operational readiness is a big one, and then maybe a little more in the weeds. Virtual networking, you know, specifically how the virtual switches are configured. So, for example, in a highly volatile, you know, non-persistent environment where you got VMs being created and blown away, you know, potentially very, very often, depending on how the virtual switches are set up from a port assignment level in vSphere 3 option, static, dynamic, ephemeral, if you've got static, I guarantee you're going to have some issues. If you got a volatile environment, just because you're going to run out of ports, it's still going to hold. It's like a stale DHCP leak. So that's something else. You know, I get calls on that all the time. But yeah, you know, planning, operational readiness, and then how you're doing the networking inside the virtual infrastructure.
Yeah. So.
Well, and end user acceptance, right? End user acceptance testing is critical, and a lot of times you don't see that being done. You don't see them going through a phase where they're actually testing with, you know, the users who are going to be the ones that are actively using it. You see them testing with IT people. So, you know, you're not seeing a very highly structured consistently. I'm not saying that everybody does this. Some customers do it right, but you're not seeing them really have a well-orchestrated, you know, end-user acceptance phase where the users are testing it and telling them what works and what doesn't so that, you know, by the time it goes live, it's working the way it's, you know, assumed to be working, right? It's the way you want it to work.
Thank you for that, Glenda. So we have another follow-up from NetMag Dave on the networking question. He said, I wonder if you could
talk a little bit more about some of the networking issues to support VDI. Won't moving desktops between offices be subject to the bandwidth availability of the interconnecting links? And how do you address that? Is it, you know, WAN optimizers? Or what are your experiences there?
Michael or Glenda?
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I mean, elaborate a little more. I would say the vast majority of implementations I've been a part of have been primarily same campus, same post, you know, same building. You know, from a overall
local area network.
I'm sorry, Glenda.
Oh no, I was just saying it's all local area network right now, and it's wildly successful. You know, there's still some challenges with wide area networks that everybody's actively working on.
Okay. All right, good. I wanted to stop here and just open it up to the audience here and see if anybody else has any questions. You know, as I say, everybody's welcome here. I want to make sure that everybody has an opportunity. We've got some other discussion points that we want to drill into. But any comments, questions for the panel?
This is David Sawyer. Can I put a question to the panel on a completely different line. Listening to the discussion, and it seems the major use case, as you were just pointing out, is Windows desktops in one location with a relatively large number of people. And looking at the growth in the marketplace of iPhones and iPads and the whole tremendous growth in the web and in the cloud. Looking at it from the point of view of a CIO, is this strategic at all, or is this just the last attempt to make Windows actually work? And is it an old mainframe-like environment which is on its last legs and Google Apps and MobileMe and the new investment of iTunes on the internet is going to make it relevant? Just like their opinions.
Yeah, so what about that? Is virtual desktop just squeezing a little bit more value out of the existing client infrastructure, or is it transformative?
This is Glenda. I'll take that. I mean, I know for a fact, just based on what we've heard a lot about in the blogs and what you are hearing from different companies is, yeah, they're actively working on, you know, getting different operating systems, you know, support for, you know, virtual desktops, meaning Linux and Macintosh. And I think that, you know, it's kind of, you know, the way I've been looking at it lately is more of a perfect storm, right, where a whole bunch of different technologies have all of a sudden finally come to an alignment point where they can deliver this solution to, you know, the business as well as the consumer market. And I think that, you know, with this proliferation of the access devices, it's not just going to be, and also with like Google Apps and things like that, it's not just going to be business uses for this technology. It's also going to be straight up consumer uses. A great example is I've got an HP netbook that I bought I've got three girls. I bought them, and when I set them up for the girls after Christmas, they had 2 gigs of free cloud drive, meaning HP lets you sign up for 2 gigs of free storage space out in the cloud that they manage for you, right? And it is straight up free to start with. And I see that kind of as an introduction for consumers feeling safe putting their information out in the, you know, quote-unquote cloud. So, I mean, is Windows on its last legs? God, I hope they are, but that's a personal wish because I'm a Linux goob. Do I think that this is just an effort to squeeze the last bit of life out of Windows? No, I don't. I mean, you know, I think that most of the applications today are written for Windows infrastructure or Windows operating systems, and that's going to stay the same for a long time. I mean, they own the framework, basically. And if you look
notwithstanding 10 billion downloads from iTunes of applications?
Well, yeah, of course. You know, so the cool thing about Macintosh, right, and Apple is that they're really good at getting end users and consumers to try things out even if they haven't quite been baked, right? They're not quite ready to eat, but a lot of people are you know, attracted to their hardware, their, you know, the designs, you know, the different features. And, you know, I'm not arguing that a lot of these younger people coming up don't really give a damn about the operating system. What they care about is the functionality. I'll give you that all day long. And, you know, my hope is that one day we'll get to a point where, you know, Linux and Apple all have the same kind of feature parity as Microsoft when it comes to, like, codecs and, you know, graphics and multimedia. But, yeah, I mean, we're seeing the beginning of the perfect storm, right? And we're seeing some huge advances. And if you think about the last 5 years and how far we've come, I think everybody will agree that, you know, a lot of people are waiting for VDI to become more stable, something that was more viable before they started implementing it. And, you know, it also had to do with the economy the last few years. So this year is the first year that we've really seen people actively taking advantage of virtual desktops and what it has to offer as far as centralized management, you know, being able to deploy applications quickly. You know, there are a lot of things, you know, around that save a lot of people, you know, IT people money. And at the same time, you look at the fact that they have the same SLAs in general as having somebody's PC on their desktop. So if something goes down with that user at their desktop, the expectation is it's not backed up and it's local, and the user has no real expectation of being able to recover that. And to some extent, you know, that's starting to not be a problem anymore with VDI.
So, Glenda, you brought up the question of backup. Is there anything specific or unique that we have to do in thinking about data protection in a VDI environment?
Well, I mean, when you're talking about, you know, virtual desktops, right, my big thing is I always tell the customers, don't promise a bigger SLA than, you know, if they were, you know, using their local desktop, because that's not a fair expectation. Now, on the other hand, if you've got VIPs, yeah, you're going to want to, you know, make copies and back it up. But, you know, the thing is that's why you have a master or a parent image or a golden image, and you try to make that image as consistent and clean as possible, and that's why you extract the application layer from that operating system, right? So that's where, like, Synapse comes in and Citrix comes in at delivering application virtually, and layering goes on top of it, so you don't have to worry about the users doing a lot of backing up and stuff. And at the same time, you got to look at roaming profiles. You got to look at their, you know, everybody has, in general, has a roaming profile and a network file share where all of their documentation and their docs should be saved, where it's automatically backed up, right? And it has nothing to do with the virtual desktop. It's all about the storage and you putting it on the drive that you've been assigned and that little, you know, slice of space that you've been given by your IT guys. And that stuff is supposed to be backed up. And you're supposed to be able to get somebody's desktop up and running in, you know, seconds and just layer the applications on it. And that's what, you know, that's the ideal, right? The ideal is so that there's nothing that you have to worry about backing up on the virtual machines and the virtual desktops. Everything's on the storage, you know, end of the house, and it's on their shared storage drive that they've been given permission to.
Okay, good. Other questions from the audience? And then I got another one from ROI Dude, if there aren't any.
He's full of questions.
That was Mike.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, Steve's actually in the area, but the weather probably caused it so he couldn't join us here in person. But
so Steve was asking, Glenda, any sign of VMware incorporating Vue as part of private cloud IT as a service?
Any part? What do you mean, any part?
Any sign.
Any sign of VMware incorporating.
Oh. Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is you know, I've been pretty, you know, public about this in the past. You know, I got a slide deck, I guess about a month ago with 65 slides on it, and all of them said cloud. And, you know, I had to go through and take cloud out. I think that, you know, part of the problem is cloud's not well-defined. I think that virtual desktops have a huge, you know, place in cloud. I think that they're going to be, you know, that virtual desktops are going to be, you know, part of the core infrastructure of cloud. But at the same time, there's no real solid definition or industry, you know, standard agreed upon definition of cloud. So everybody's using cloud as kind of an adjective. They're not really using it in a way that is consistent and makes sense to everybody. And, you know, I heard a great question the other day at a customer site where an engineer asked, you know, the customer, what's your definition of cloud? What do you think cloud is? And I think it's important to ask that question because it seems like everybody has a different definition of cloud. but in my definition of cloud, yes, virtual desktops are part of that. Am I actively selling it as cloud? No, I'm looking at what the use cases are, and I'm talking to the customers, and I'm solving their problems directly, you know?
Yeah, I'd like to piggyback on Glenda's very good comments. I think a sign, probably the greatest sign, would be Citrix with HGX or VMware /32 with PC over IP looking to monetize the protocol by leasing it out. I've done some cloud-based and Amazon, essentially glorified terminal services type solutions for customers, and I'm stuck to RDP. Well, if I could go to VMware and lease PC over IP for X dollars a month or X dollars an instance or X dollars a user and make an instance running in Amazon or TerraMark or wherever it is, doesn't really matter, but you know, leverage the existing cloud infrastructure. Now, I don't want to build a cloud. It costs far too much money, and the margins maybe are debatable, but if I could lease the protocol, HGX, PC over IP, whatever, you know, Glenda, X, whatever, if I could do that, I think that makes true cloud-based VDI viable. Otherwise, it's, you know, as Glenda said, it's putting the word cloud on some slide decks and calling it desktop as a service.
Yeah. So, I mean, and also, I mean, for more on that, I mean, like the PC over IP, one thing I do have to, you know, kind of step up with is I'm a big, you know, historical buff around the different protocols, and I will say this. You know, PC over IP was designed and developed specifically to deliver desktops. Citrix is HDX is designed to deliver, you know, applications. And, you know, when you're looking at, you know, virtual desktops and when you're looking at, you know, virtualized applications, yeah, you know, FinApp is fantastic. It's a great solution. But a lot of people with large Citrix implementations are using FinApp in their implementations to create the packages. I mean, there's a lot of incest going on. And, you know, in the public, there's like these, you know, out in the blogs and in the media, there's these solid lines, you know, you're either, you know, VMware or you're Citrix. And, you know, every once in a while you get somebody that, you know, raises the Microsoft flag. But for the most part, you know, this battle is really between Citrix and VMware. And it's something that's kind of like a public battle. I mean, all of the engineers who are actually trench warriors and got their boots on the ground, you know, they don't really care about that. They care about the solution and they care about, you know, taking pieces from wherever they have to give that solution to their end users so that their end users are productive. And the PC over IP and the HDX, I mean, the bottom line is they're critical. You know, graphics and multimedia are, you know, in my mind, the biggest barrier to widespread adoption and even consumer adoption. I mean, you know, some of the stuff that Jason was saying, that leads you down the consumer line, right, where you just lease, you know, he's saying, hey, we should just be able to rent resources, right? We don't need to, you know, build them ourselves. We should be able to rent them and, you know, be able to get to our stuff from anywhere at any time, regardless of whether it's a business, you know, that's providing that information to you or it's your personal stuff. And that's kind of, you know, where that, you know, HP netbook cloud drive, you know, comes from. And to me, that's me, you know, in my mind, that's us slowly going into and dipping the consumers into the cloud or into, you know, virtualization and showing them how it works so that they understand it natively when they do enter the job market.
Okay, so we're basically out of time, but I wanted to give each of the panel members one last word. I'll give you some ideas. You could either respond with advice to users. I mean, we've touched a lot of areas. Set SLA expectations, be data-driven, understand user needs. Nick Allen made the comment that planning costs are going to be a big factor in TCO. So any advice to users, that's sort of one category you could choose. Or you could answer the question, is 2011 going to be the year of VDI? So let's start with Glenda. Just final word.
You know, my big thing is this the year of VDI, or, you know, or is every year the year of VDI? I think that there's going to be many years of VDI in virtual desktops. I don't think it's just something that's going on this year. It's, like I said, it's the perfect storm, and we're just seeing the beginning of this.
Okay. Michael Keane, your last word.
It's all about the data, and it's having the plan and creating the roadmap to get from point A to point B, and you know, slaying the dragons that lie between, you know, in that gap. So, plan it.
Great, and Jason, we'll give you the final word.
Beautiful. So I'll agree with Glenda on the quote unquote year of VDI, and I would add that, you know, just because a team or, you know, a company, organization, consultant, whatever, are good at designing virtual service or virtualization solutions does not necessarily mean they've got the experience and the battle scars to do VDI. You know, probably a third of my time right now is going in, you know, re-architecting solutions because someone designed it the way they would design a server vert solution, and this is a completely new type of solution with completely new requirements. It all goes back to data, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Outstanding. All right. Well, on behalf of the Wikibon community, I really would like to thank Glenda Canfield, Michael Keane, and Jason Langone for joining us today and sharing your perspectives with peers. And thanks very much to our friend Rob Pegler for joining and bringing that storage perspective, and of course to my wingmen, Stu Miniman and John MacArthur. Appreciate you guys coming into the Wikibon offices. And I also want to thank the other members who contributed to the call today. Mike Alvarado, Steve Kaplan, the ROI dude, David Foyer, Nick Allen, and NetMag Dave. Thank you for your participation. Just as a reminder, over the next 24 hours or so, we will have up a minimum of 6 research notes pertaining to the call today, so feel free to hit the edit key and add your own insights or post your own wiki tips or your own thoughts, and we appreciate your comments and your contributions to the community. We'll be sending all that stuff out along with the newsletter. You can watch this on justin.tv/wikibon. It will also be up on siliconangle.tv within an hour or so. So thanks for listening, everybody, and thanks for being a Wikibon member. Bye for now.